New Year, same extra value meals at McDonald's. Now get a savory sausage McMuffin with egg, plus hash browns, and a small coffee for just $5.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.
All right, welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, 1560 AM. Dynamo All Access. Again, a reminder, the Houston Dynamo take on Seattle this coming weekend. And by the way, Bud Light reminds you to get over to HoustonDynamo.com. That's where you can get your tickets to the Dynamo Seattle. It is the final home game of the year. You want to be there. It's the Seattle Sounders coming to town with Obafemi Martins and Clint Dempsey. And Bud Light reminds you to get down to the stadium with like-minded individuals. Bud Light, longtime sponsors of me on the radio. We can't thank Bud Light enough. And again, Bud Light reminds you, get your tickets at HoustonDynamo.com. And that's the perfect entree into Dynamo General Manager Matt Jordan joining us now. Matt, thank you very much for coming on the program.
Thank you very much, as always, for having me, Glenn. I appreciate it.
All right, let's just talk about the final two games here. Still possibility. You just really got to focus kind of on what you're doing, right?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, you know, there's obviously that's all we can do right now. I mean, what I've been most pleased with is just seeing the energy around the team right now. I mean, you know, a lot of times, and we've both been a part of these situations where, you know, you get to this point in the year and, you know, there's, you know, the environment maybe isn't, you know, as positive as it could be, but I can tell you right now, I mean, the energy in the group is very good. They're working their tails off. They're excited about the challenge of the next two games. And look, as tight as the West is, you know, we know anything can happen. And so it's important for us to focus on what we can control and take care of business.
You've been in these final home game situations throughout your career. How important is it in this final match to leave a great positive image the last time you're in front, potentially the last time you're in front of your home fans?
It's always important. I mean, every home game is important, you know, that your home fans leave the stadium, you know, feeling happy about what they saw that day and the commitment they saw from the players on the field and from the staff. And so it's important. Every home game is very important in that aspect. And you know, the guys are looking forward to the challenge.
What do you as a general manager want to see?
Commitment. You know, I mean, you know, you just want to see a total commitment. You want to see every guy on the field do everything humanly possible to get the result and to keep our playoff hopes alive. I mean, you just want to see commitment and dedication and doing anything humanly possible to get the 3 points.
And obviously you're critiquing players all year long, habits, tendencies, qualities, without naming names, obviously. Do things change from your initial impressions throughout the course of a season?
No, look, I've been in pro soccer for over 20 years, and every season, you know, has ups and downs, and it presents, you know, different challenges. And this season is no different. I think, you know, for being honest, there's been a couple crossroad games. You know, every season, I think you hit two or three crossroad games, and I think, you know, we didn't, you know, perform as good as we were capable of doing. You know, a lot of that has to do with probably, you know, some of those critical games, international call-ups and injuries that we were dealing with that. But at the same time, you know, we're in the Western Conference. You know, we're still in the discussion. You know, I think there's been a lot of players that have really, you know, you see guys. You see players from a distance, you compete against them, but when you get to know them on a personal level, you see their work habits and training habits on a day-in, day-out basis, that's when, you know, I think you really learn the details about a guy, and that's been great.
Let's talk about one of your young signings, 19-year-old Mauro Manotas. I had the good fortune of meeting his parents, two very lovely people, the other day. The Santos game was very important for him. For me, a big statement that he comes into this game and plays well, you know, not having a lot of games. And is that something you look at? In other words, in a Santos game where you haven't seen a lot of guys or maybe they haven't gotten a lot of playing time, for them to come out and really be up for the moment, is that a real tip-off to you, Matt Jordan, the general manager?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, because it's, you know, we're playing the Mexican champions. They're no slouch. And, you know, for a player of his age to come out and to perform in that manner, I mean, you know, we all see the talent and the quality he has. And now it's just how do we, you know, harness that and bring along in the right way. What I was most pleased with coming out of that game in particular, you know, when I looked at him and Will Bruin up top, you know, both of them work so hard on both sides of the ball. And that's what Owen, you know, really demands from his players. And I think that you know, Morrow really showed himself quite well in that game. And the team showed. I thought it was an important game. I thought it was an important moment to have that game coming off a tough defeat, you know, just to kind of not have a two-week break and to keep the rhythm of games going. I thought the timing was perfect.
What about the fact that
you know, Amaro Manotas in the future? Is he a project? Is he 2 years away? Do you see him getting a lot of playing time next year? What are your expectations of him?
Our expectations that he's going to continue to, you know, to evolve and grow. And I mean, anytime you transition to a new league and a new country, there's an adaptation period. But I think first and foremost, he's a good person. He's a very humble person, comes from very humble beginnings. You saw that, you alluded to his parents, and you see that in them as well. And so it's a player that we feel has a bright future. But, you know, at the same time, you got to bring him along in the right way. I mean, if you look at a player like, you know, Fabián Castillo, you know, I mean, there's a guy, it takes time. It took some time. And so, but again, Moro is a player that we feel has a lot of upside. And, you know, you don't find players of that profile with good feet and you know that have, you know, good pace and ability to make really good runs. And the benefit we have is that Owen was a forward. And so I think that all of our forwards have benefited from that. You could really see that, especially, you know, Will's progression this year as well.
Dynamo General Manager Matt Jordan joining us here as we talk all thing Dynamo here on Dynamo All Access. Ahead of the Dynamo, again, a reminder, it will be this weekend. They will take on the Seattle Sounders. Get over to HoustonDynamo.com. That's where you get your tickets. It is the final game of the year. It's expected to be a sellout. Get your tickets now. It's your last, potentially your last chance. I don't want to be the negative Nelly here. It is potentially the last chance to see the Dynamo in action against a very good Seattle team. You know, one thing I look around Major League Soccer, and, with all the talk about the national team and all the buzz and everything, all the emotion flying right now, there's interesting chatter out there, which I think is a good thing. It shows that the sport's growing here. But, you know, when we look at the striker position for the U.S. national team, it's really only maybe that I could come up with four or five American, and that includes Josie Altidore, American-born forwards who... maybe two of them are really starters in Major League Soccer. Do you see that as something that could be a little bit dangerous for the national team?
Yeah, listen, I think, you know, it's always a challenge, you know, in any team setting, whether it's a national team, a club team, you know, and you see this throughout the world. There's always transitional periods, you know, and it's always challenging, you know, it's such a delicate balance of having those experienced, you know, guys, veterans that you know, you hang your hat on, while at the same time bringing up, you know, young, talented players. And I think you see that with the national team right now. And I mean, you know, I think that's really why the national team staff has, you know, placed an emphasis on, you know, looking at the Mexican-American players a lot more. Looking at, you see a lot of German-born players that they've really tapped into, and again, there's also a responsibility to continue to develop the players in our own, you know, that are playing in the league. So it's tough. It's a delicate balance, you know. And it's, I mean, you know, if you or I had the magic wand and the answer to that, you know, we probably wouldn't be sitting here today, you know. And so it's something that, but I do believe that, you know, it's a transitional period, probably even for the group there.
All right, let's go to Eric Cubo Torres. Obviously, having a good pre-Olympic or CONCACAF qualifying for the Olympics. Mexico will go to the Olympics. Cubo Torres has been a big part of it. This has got to be music to your ears.
Yeah, actually, before I walked over with this interview with you, I was just speaking to Dennis DeClos, the Mexican Federation's technical director. Called him to congratulate him. He and I, and we've built a good relationship. And you know, he said Eric was our best player. You know, he said, you know, Eric was a real, you know, was a real bright spot in the group. And I think, you know, he said something to me that, you know, stood out. He said, listen, I mean, you see that Eric is getting that rhythm, you know, and it just takes time to get rhythm as a player. And he scored a couple goals. And I think it's something that's important for his confidence. And you know, we're happy for him. You know, obviously, it's always a double-edged sword with international competitions, as we know all too well. But, you know, we feel it's a real positive for Eric and a good springboard for him moving forward.
Now, you know, I know in all sports in this country, when people get on talk radio, they equate your salary with what you should return as an investment to your club. So as a designated player, as one of the high-profile players of the Dynamo, is this team essentially going to be built around him in some degree next year?
Well, he'll be an important part of this team. But I can tell you, I mean, and you've been around the Dynamo and in the city longer than I have, but something is that no one player encompasses the Houston Dynamo. You know, no one player is bigger than the team. And that goes for everybody. You know, that's the foundation of our success. That's going to be a core principle for us moving forward. He's an important piece, but we have a lot of important pieces. But, you know, again, it's for us, it's about the group. And that's important for our fans to know.
Still trying to figure out in the future, like, how you incorporate him and Will Bruin. Do you guys think they can play together? Giles Barnes, you know, if you find another attacking player, you know, is it something that you still have to kind of see come to fruition?
Well, you know, I think it's like anything. You know, it's good to have options. You know, the nice thing we have with our roster is we have a lot of different players that can play in different positions. And again, you know, you see, I think that, you know, the complement of our forwards, they can all play together. And the other thing I think that's nice, if you look at, you know, our four forwards right now, you look at Eric, you look at Will, you know, Giles can play wide and also as a striker. And then you look at Morrow, there are four different profiles. And, you know, and that's something that's always, you know, that's always a positive for a group, you know, is you have four different profiles that bring different things to the table. And that's what we like about the group we have right now.
All right, let's go to Will Bruin, because we can't have this discussion without talking about him. I just, you know, I know we've talked about this before, but he just, from a maturity standpoint, from a professional standpoint, he just seems to have really blossomed this year.
Yeah, look, I think Will's shown a tremendous amount of commitment this year, and he's grown a lot as a player. I think he's grown a lot as a person, and I give a lot of credit to Owen and our coaching staff for that. And you know, I think the good thing you see with Will is, I mean, he's become not just a one-dimensional player. You know, he's actually looked, you know, there's been games where he's holding the ball and bringing the team up, a lot of games where he's holding the ball and bringing the team up the field. He's combining, you know, he's in, and you know, and he's always good at getting on the end of stuff in the box, but I think that's where you've seen his evolution, and we're happy for him. You know, I mean, on a personal level, I'm very happy for him as well.
All right. How about a couple of thoughts on the US-Mexico, the 3-2 game?
Yeah, it's one of those games you watch. And you know, this is a former player. You actually finished watching the game, and that was actually piggybacked with our game as well. But I mean, after that game, I felt like I played. You know, that game had so many different emotions. It had, you know, it was like a drama movie. You know, and I mean, the game could have gone either way. And you know, it's really unfortunate that it didn't, you know, turn out, you know, the way that we had hoped. The guys put a lot into it. And, you know, I think it was tough even going into the Costa Rica game so quickly after that defeat. But, you know, look, the guys, they'll bounce back. But it was tough. There's no way else to put it. It was a tough result, especially in front of that type of crowd, you know. And, I mean, it could have gone either way. And it was drama-filled for sure.
Matt, as always, thank you for your time. Thanks for being so candid.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right. He's Dynamo General Manager Matt Jordan. We'll take a break here on Yahoo Sports Radio 1560 AM. It's a Bud Light break. All right. It's time for that weekly visit with the manager. Owen Coyle joins us now on Yahoo Sports Radio 1560 AM. As always, Owen, thank you very much for coming on the program.
Oh, it's a pleasure as always, Dan. Great to chat with you.
Well, let's start with the Santos game, because I think there was a lot to be learned that night, wasn't there?
Absolutely. I mean, that was there was a number of great things obviously happened. First and foremost, it was a Charities Cup game, and a lot of people benefit from the game, which is great to begin with. And then from the soccer side, it was a great experience for ourselves and our young players to play against the Mexican champions. It's a wonderful team with some outstanding players, and so it was great for me, a great learning curve and a fantastic exercise.
Some of the younger players got some very good minutes in this game, and you saw some good things. Take us into some of these guys like Mauro Manotas and company.
Yeah, well, absolutely. As you know, I mean, you've seen in the last period of time, Glenn, Lionel Miranda playing week in, week out, and developing and doing very well. Rashid Olavaye coming into the team. Mauro Manotas is coming off the bench and playing at various times. Rob Lovejoy is back from injury and getting back in the 18 and being involved. So for the continued development of young players, that's why it was always going to be a great test. And we had the opportunity to start Mauro Manotas, because Will Bruin's been doing very well as a number 9. And as you know, Will certainly earned and deserving of our loyalty, and we've shown that. But I've always been craving the opportunity to get Manotas in the team, and this provided that. I played both of them up front, as you know, and Will did very well helping his young striker. But it was great to see Manotas producing that level of performance, because it's what we see on the training ground, and we know moving forward he's set for a big career at the Dynamo. And obviously the kid scored two great goals against, as I say, the Mexican champions. But it was more his rounded performance I was pleased with. Because, you know, striker scored goals, I think it takes you to another level. But first and foremost, we need to bring the level of performance. And he did that. He's learned, I think, from looking and watching, Will, how hard you've got to work. And then when you can bring the talent and the ability, and, you know, my notice is natural pace. He covers the ground. He looks pleasing on the eye. And he can produce some wonderful skill. And even only the other week, if you remember, when he came off the bench, he created a great opportunity. And obviously, it blazed over the bar. But you know that he has the potential to be an exciting player. And again, Miranda played, and we got the young players back, a lot of them into the game in the second half. So it was really, I mean, I was really pleased with him, with the whole exercise.
Talk a little bit about Manotas, because nobody sees him better than you and your staff. You see it on a daily basis. You see the subtle changes and improvements that occur. Take us a little into what you've seen from him since you've acquired him. You know, for those of us who are not there on a daily basis, and that's pretty much everybody.
Yeah, well, what was first and foremost, we've seen a lot of potential in him to begin with. That's why we signed him. We've seen, as I said before, the stuff he's got. He's a great movement, very clever player. He's quick. He can score a goal. He's brave. He's strong. And those characteristics for a player. Now, remember, he's 19. He's coming from a completely different culture, different country in terms of how the game's played. So, of course, there's an adaptation period within the MLS. He played the Open Cup, as you know, and scored, and just everything that we see and believe in him. And I'm seeing that in the training ground every day. I mean, even today, Glenn, I mean, I can't tell you how good he was in the training ground today, because obviously the game has then given him another little step of confidence, which is brilliant. And as I say, we truly believe that he could come into a very good striker. Scores goals. What he has to do, and this is the important thing, he has to learn. He has to learn how tough a league the MLS is, and that you have to be in terms of within the team, the work ethic, the application that you need to bring to help your teammates. And he's grasped that. He's understanding where he's going to do the smart work, where he's going to work hard for his team. Sometimes not necessarily with the ball. Sometimes doing all the dirty work, as we call it, to earn the right to have a platform to get the ball. And that starts with your first line of defence, your attack, and that starts there. So I think he's grasping that. I still think there's more to come from him, and that comes with playing games, it comes with getting a rhythm, continuity, consistency of selection, all those stuff that comes with it. But for a man of such a young age, we have high hopes that he can go on to have a very good career.
Owen, in Colombia, did he have less responsibility when the ball was lost? In other words, is that a part of his game that, you know, maybe he wasn't expected to do playing in Colombia?
Yeah, I think it comes with the different styles, Glenn, in terms of the leagues. So, you know, in the league and in the one that he played, then there's not as much onus at the top end of the pitch when the opposition is involved, that they're going to come and they're going to press high. There's a tendency to kind of let them have it. Step off the game, and then it's slow build up, and then it's, you know, it's a bit quicker in that final third. Whereas, as you know, in our league, we like to be working initially straight away and going press and working hard at the right time. So I think for any young player of that age, with that learning curve, that understanding what's asked of you, what's required of you. But I think slowly but surely, it's certainly the penny's dropping in that respect. You see as well from the start of the season to the end now, I would suggest the improvement in young Lionel Miranda in terms of what he brings to the team, both with the ball and without the ball. And we're not a team of a Real Madrid that we can afford to have, you know, one or two people that just play on the ball and everything else. Not that they do, I'm not saying snap for a minute, but in terms, I'm talking about in essence of the size of that club. We are going to be a club that everybody's going to have to work their socks off first and foremost, and then that quality comes into play. So I think, of course, it's a different style of play from what he's used to, but he's certainly grasping that. As is Lionel, as is Rashid Olabai, these younger ones that are going to get better the more we continue to work and train and as I say, transmit that from training ground onto the match field.
He's the Dynamo manager, Owen Coyle, ahead of the Seattle Sounders coming to BBVA Compass Stadium this Sunday. Owen, what do you want out of the team on Sunday?
I want to win. I want to go and win. I want to carry on the very good form that we've been in at home at the BBVA Stadium. I mean, since May, which is now, we're now into the, you know, over 5 months, we've played nine games at home in the league, Glenn, and we're 7-1-1. We've scored 20 goals and we've conceded 10 in those nine games. We've been in terrific form at the BBVA. It goes without saying. So we want to go and win that game and put our smiles in the fans' faces and ultimately see where that takes us. I mean, if you actually included the Open Cup and the Charities Cup game against the Mexican champions, we're actually 10-1-1 in the last 12 games at home at the BBVA. So the fans have certainly not been they've not been starved of entertainment, because they say the 9 league games have been tough to go, 20 for ourselves, and we've conceded 10, so we want to do better in that respect. But they're certainly scoring a lot of goals going forward, and that's resulted, as I've said there, in 22 points from 27 available at home. So we want to go and get another 3 and make that, you know, make that 25 out of 30. And to do that, we're going to have to play well, because this is a very good Seattle side, a side that's back to full strength, with obviously Obafemi Martin and Clint Dempsey in the team, which make a huge difference to their team. So we have to make sure we're aware of that threat. But equally, as I say, we don't score 20 goals by accident in 9 games. We've scored that because we've played very well at home, and we want to continue to do that.
Owen, I wanted to ask you a question about something, because of, you know, obviously your background playing in England and Scotland. When I look around Major League Soccer, and you know, with all the furor over the national team losing to Mexico 3-2, and all the emotion running, and there are very few American strikers in Major League Soccer that are getting legitimate playing time. One of them is Will Bruin, but there's very few outside of maybe Juan Agudelo. Josie Altidore obviously is the one in Toronto, but it's probably only 4 or 5 players. Chris Wondolowski, but outside of these 5 guys, these positions of importance are being filled by designated players and foreigners. Is there a danger to this? Because we know how it hurt the Premier League. Is there a bit of a danger to this?
I think it's a great question. I think it's always important, and I've said this regardless of where you are, that you have the balance, Glenn. You have the balance. I mean, everybody that plays for the country, of course, everyone of them is patriotic. There's no doubt about that. But I think it's always important as well that you have players within your own respective league that can play. What I would say in with regards to Will Bruin, I think Will's slightly different to the other strikers that the national team have. That's why, for me, I know he is. I mean, I love him about, he wears his hat on the sleeve. I don't think he'll look out of depth in that company. I truly believe that. And I think he'd be a different type of makeup in terms of the, you know, strikers have a certain profile. Well, I think he's a different profile to really what's in the national setup. And I think there's a, of course, for me, there's always the belief that you should have a number of players, particularly goal scorers, that can make the impact and win games, because they're the game changers. They're the people that win your games at the top end of the field. And I think within the MLSI, I mean, I look through and I think there are players that can help the national team to do that.
Owen, from day one when you saw Will Bruin to now, the rise in his game, obviously for me, I see his hold-up play much improved than in the past. Professionalism, a lot of things. I know we've talked about it before. What did you see from day one to now?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned it, Glenn, but from what I've seen from day one, is somebody that is always, he walks his socks off. I mean, you always see him. He's always given everything for the team. So I always thought he'd be a team player. But I looked, and having played in the position myself, I just felt, and it was only my opinion, of course, but I just felt at the time that there was bits and pieces that we could help to kind of smooth over the rough edges, is the best way I'd put it. And there was a lot of things important to that. You mentioned one in there, which people don't realise how important it is, and that's making sure that, you know, you're ultra-professional in terms of how you prepare for games, how you're resting at the right time off the field, you're doing all the right stuff. Because you don't just turn up, click your fingers, and think you're able to get into a good game. I mean, the best player, the Lionel Messi's and Ronaldo's, they don't do that. They prepare meticulously to make sure they're ready to enter that field and be at their very best. And I think with Will as well, in terms of, for me, developing him as a number 9 to lead the line, then I think there was little adjustments he had to make to his game. And to be fair to him, as much as we can add experience and hopefully knowledge and all the stuff that we've picked up over the years, the biggest player in all this, Glenn, as you know, is the player himself, because he has to be prepared to take that on board, recognise, you know what, yeah, that's going to help me become a player, which in turn helps me us to become a better team. And that's always a driving force for coaches. But within that, there's no doubt for me that Will has. He's improved from the outset of the season. Again, you'll know this because I left him out at the start of the season and I told him why. I explained to him, Will, the first couple of games, as you know, I explained to him, this is what we need from this position. And if you do that, then you'll always be in the team. And if you don't, then you won't, because I'll bring somebody else in, and there's going to be able to fulfill the needs of that position in our team. And to be fair to him, he grasped what it was all about, and he's never been out of the team since.
Owen, last thing. How do you defend the likes of Obafemi Martins and Clint Dempsey, two players that, you know, out of nothing can create something for themselves? There is a lot of unpredictability with these two, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, well, first and foremost, what they're playing, there's a lot of quality with those two. As you say, any bounce of the ball, you can do something special, because that's the quality they have. And that's why Seattle pay them the money they do, Glenn. You know, so, I mean, we all would love to have that finance available. But if you don't, you go and you make the best of what you've got. So what we've got to do is be focused and tuned in and concentrated against Obafemi Martins and Clint Dempsey, because they can play the little 1-2s around the corner. If they get a chance, they can finish. But equally, they also know as well that we've got a team that can go and score goals, as we've shown. 20 goals in 9 games, we want to continue that. So I think it's important that we're focused, concentrated, we have a good shape against the ball, and that's always a key to playing against players like that, that we don't leave ourselves isolated in 1v1 situations in bad areas with them, because that's the enemy that can hurt you. So again, it's important that we are tight, we're compact, knowing our job against the ball. And when we get it, which we will, then we go and play and we look to express ourselves. If we do that, this is a game that we can win.
Owen, we wish you the best of luck against Seattle. Thank you, as always, for all the insight coming on the program weekly.
It's a pleasure, Glenn. I've loved that.
All right. He's Owen Coyle, Dynamo manager. They are in action this Sunday, taking on the Seattle Sounders. Get out to BBVA Compass Stadium. Tickets at HoustonDynamo.com. We'll take a break. All right, we continue the soccer talk here when it comes to the United States-Mexico. A 3-2 loss, tons of emotion and passion around this one. 90,000 people, huge television audience, and obviously this rivalry just continues to blossom. Let's go now to ESPN FC's Tom Marshall. Quick word here for Bud Light as we welcome you back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Bud Light reminds you to get down to the Dynamo Seattle game this weekend. Get in the stadium with like-minded individuals, and personally, without Bud Light, probably wouldn't have soccer on the air. They go way back with me, so thank you, Bud Light. And with that, we bring in now, from ESPN FC, he's a real expert on Liga MX and the Mexican national team, he's Tom Marshall. Tom, thank you for coming on.
No problem, Glenn. It's always a pleasure.
Well, let's first, you were in Pasadena for this big one, 90,000 people, 3-2 Mexico win. Let's just get your first general impressions, number one on the environment, and then number two on the game.
I think, you know, what I've written about is that there's very few places in world soccer where you'll get a better atmosphere than the one we saw on last Saturday in Pasadena. I mean, it was unbelievable. I mean, you know, the crowd was split a bit more evenly than last in 2011 when they played. I'd say like 70-30. So, you know, outside for hours beforehand, there's a real party atmosphere. I mean, and let's not forget, you can't mix fans like we saw on Saturday in, you know, Italy or England or Argentina. I mean, it just doesn't happen. And it was, yeah, unbelievable experience. You know, it was, real privilege to be there. As for the game, I mean, it's almost like it lived up to it. It lived up to the atmosphere. It was a great game. I mean, you know, you could argue the quality wasn't brilliant, but, you know, in terms of entertainment and you know, it looked like Mexico, when they took the lead, were going to kind of dominate, but the United States came back. And then they did that once again in extra time. And that for those, you know, 5-10 minutes after the U.S. equalized for that second time, it looked like the United States were gonna do it. So, yeah, what a great game, and what a goal from Paul Aguilar to finish it at the end.
Was this about how good Mexico was, or the balance between how average the U.S. was?
Obviously, I think it's a bit of both, but I think, from what I've seen in the coverage, I don't think people have stressed enough how well Mexico played. I thought they were really, really good. I thought they started very well. I thought the United States' equaliser came against the run of play. And I know Klinsmann's been saying, you know, it was a very tight game. Well, yeah, obviously on the score, it was very tight. But I think Mexico played really well, and you know, there was a lot of pressure on them going into this game. There really was. And I think mentally, more than anything, you know, I think we've seen Mexican teams perhaps over the last couple of years kind of wilt a bit when things don't go the way. And I think that one of the biggest positives from a Mexican point of view was the way they kept going, the way they kept passing the ball, the way they kept, you know, searching for new angles to get behind the U.S. defense. And, you know, I know the U.S. performance wasn't great, but let's not forget that this was an experienced U.S. team. I feel like everybody's kind of so negative and, you know, this US team was terrible. And, you know, it was a very different team than the one we saw in the Gold Cup. And you know, I think Mexico deserved credit for what was a top performance.
Yeah, nobody taken, I don't think can for a second take any credit away from Mexico. Defensively, the two goals they conceded, pretty poor, actually. Rafa Márquez and Peralta were lost Jeff Cameron. They both were looking at each other on the set piece. Was a great set piece. And then the Yedlin to Bobby Wood goal, it was unbelievable. The lack of pressure on DeAndre Yedlin and the simple diagonal run, and it's a goal. I mean, so to me it was a night where teams really took advantage of moments of loss of concentration overall collectively as teams. Were you a little surprised that the U.S. defended so deep in this and allowed Mexico all that indigenous confidence on the ball, which they're so noted for?
Yeah, but I'd also say that I think that Tuca Ferretti's formation and his player selection was, I mean, you know, if somebody would have said that Raul Jimenez, Chicharito, and Oribe Peralta would all start that game a few weeks ago, people would have thought you were crazy. I mean, they're all three number nines. They're all known for being goal scorers. And you know, to have all of them on the pitch at the same time, I think that actually put the United States on the back foot. And I think it made it really difficult for them to kind of play out the back. And I think that's the reason why they kind of dropped deeper to kind of try and find some space and try and get on the ball and try and play it out. But, yeah, I think that... Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think Mexico, one of the best things about the Mexican national team and the way they play is that the way they press the ball, the way when they've got the ball in defence, how many players numerically are in front of that ball. I mean, it's a very risky way of playing, but, you know, it is also good to watch. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, surprised in a way, but then I think again, you have to give Mexico credit for pinning them back like that.
Was it that risky, you think? I mean, essentially, it means you got to contain Jozy Altidore, Michael Bradley, and Clint Dempsey, which, at the end of the day, I think was achieved.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, those three players aren't in the best form either. I think on the day, obviously, they can do you a lot of damage, but you know, coming into the game, they've not been at the best. But I'm talking more kind of in possession. When Mexico in possession, it's like, you know, sometimes you look in the game, especially when you see them play live, and, you know, you look at kind of when Rafa Márquez dropped deep into, you know, and got on the ball, and he was the last man. And then you look at those, like, there's almost, you know, two American players in front of him, and then the rest of the Mexico team's kind of more advanced. So it's like, if Márquez doesn't play the right ball there, you're in trouble. And I think that's just, you know, that's just how Mexico played, and I think they played that way for at least going back to La Volpe in 2006.
Yeah, certainly was aggressive tactically. And for me, though, I think the times that the United States have done well, Tom, against Mexico is when they've had portions of a game where they have pressed them in the middle third of the field or higher up in their third of the field. And that really didn't come to any fruition in this game at all, really. I mean, very few moments when the United States could put together a pressing game.
No, yeah, definitely. No, I think, apart from really Michael Bradley, who, you know, I just think he's a really top player. And I think every time he plays against Mexico, he shows that. Apart from him, you look around there and you look at, you know, Beckerman didn't have the greatest game. And then, you know, you look at Dempsey, who you expect so much of because he's such a big player for the States. And he didn't really do it. And then Altidore was pretty lonely and didn't really get involved enough. And, yeah, I just think, you know, sometimes, you know, as when you're analysing a game, and obviously it's good to get into the detail and to get in the background, but I think from the United States point of view, and I know Klinsmann's getting a lot of stick right now, and you know, perhaps rightly so, but he had a lot of players come into this game not in form, and a lot of his biggest players, and I think, you know, that definitely didn't help him.
Yeah, but isn't it a manager's job to try and put the best 11 together? I mean, I think it was a reach back to the past. I mean, I think Jermaine Jones had an absolute nightmare in front of DeMarcus Beasley. I know people talk about his grit and determination and work ethic, but I thought he had a very positionally really, really struggled in that area. You can question why he was put there. I think this whole attitude of whether you were pressed back organically or you decided to defend deep, the U.S. could never get out of it. I mean, it was total control of this game by Mexico, and then a couple of odd counterattacks that broke down a lot of times. And again, I think Jozy Altidore has no competition at that position. I don't think Clint Dempsey, in his defense, got on the ball a lot based on the way the game was being played. So really your hope was a magical moment from Dempsey or Bradley, a set piece, which you got one, on the counterattack. And I don't think you're going to win games like that.
Yeah, it almost seems like the United States at the minute are in this kind of no man's land in terms of, you know, I mean, obviously Klinsmann's taking stick for his team selection, but I don't know, it's just difficult. It seems like the youngsters aren't really doing it as they were expected to do at the Gold Cup. And then, like, the old generation are now obviously getting older. I mean, you know, Jones and DeMarcus Beasley, I mean, and Dempsey's creeping up there in age now. So it's like, I think, I mean, I don't know, I'm not involved as much as you guys there with the US setup, but it seems like the big question mark over the US team right now is who's taking these players? I mean, who's replacing these players? Obviously, you've got someone like Landon Donovan who's almost irreplaceable, but, you know, you still want to see who are these, who's coming up, you know what I mean? Who's going to be these big game players when you're facing your big rivals like Mexico? Who's going to be the ones that step up?
Yeah, that is the big question. I think you're hitting the nail on the head. So that's part one of our interview with Tom Marshall from Guadalajara, Mexico, of ESPN FC. Stay with us. Part two is right around the corner. Welcome back to Dynamo All Access here on Yahoo Sports Radio, 1560 AM. Let's continue the talk in Guadalajara, Mexico, with the ESPN FC's Tom Marshall. Let's go to Paul Aguilar, though, who had just a spectacular game in on a lot of fronts, didn't he?
Oh, he was brilliant. He was. I think that's the best game I've ever seen him play. And I mean, obviously the goal at the end, that remarkable volley. I mean, technically, just a brilliantly beautifully struck shot. And after playing 118 minutes, I mean, you know, Glenn, you know better than me. I mean, that's, you're tired at that point in the game, and to be able to kind of control your emotions and your tiredness, and be able to, you know, stroke that ball into the corner of the net is a remarkable skill. Yeah, he was brilliant. The first, you know, he was involved in the first goal. He was involved in the second goal. So, yeah, the best game he's played for Mexico. And I don't know, he's a player who I've never been a massive fan of, I'm not going to lie. I've never been one of those that was 100% convinced his international quality, especially on the defensive end. But, you know, when he gives you so much going forward like that, I mean, you know, Juan Carlos Osorio was watching on there, the new Mexico coach. He was in Pasadena. And, you know, Osorio would have watched that game and just been like, there's my right back. I mean, you know, there's a couple of...
But the tactics really, you know, played favorably to Paul Aguilar in the way he plays the game, because it was, you know, it was an all-out attack, coming out to be aggressive, get the ball, keep it, and go at the United States. And I think that behooves the way Paul Aguilar plays the game. I mean, if we had seen him defending more, then we would have known the U.S. might have been grabbing a little bit more of the game.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, you know, the game was set up for the Mexican fullbacks in terms of, you know, Rafa Márquez dropping deep. I mean, he wasn't obviously running forward, so when he drops back, it becomes a three centre-backs. And then, obviously, with the three strikers, the three Mexican strikers, they were all very narrow, so which obviously takes defenders away, takes midfielders away there from the wide spots, and then Aguilar obviously has got room to move in there. And I think we saw that, especially with the second Mexican goal. I know, and the first one as well. I mean, the way, you know, that intricate movement, it was like the US players were just kind of itty. I mean, they didn't know where the ball was coming and where the players were going. It was just great movement. And yeah, like I said, and I think Ferretti deserves a lot of credit for the team he put out there, because this wasn't a team. We didn't see a Mexico team that anybody expected. Nobody expected that. But he kept stressing, I've got this idea of how we can beat the United States. I know what we've got to do. I'm going to put this forward to the players, and if they agree, that's how we're going to play. So, I mean, that's how the formation and the player selection came about. I mean, let's not forget that, you know, Tecatito Corona, who's the most informed Mexico player, came off the bench very late on. You know, Carlos Vela, who's, I think, by quite some distance, the most talented Mexican player, didn't feature. Jonathan Dos Santos, who's, you know, had a great season at Villarreal, didn't play. I mean, these weren't kind of popular decisions, but at the end of the day, they got the job done. And I think, although it was very tight in the end, I think they got it done with, you know, with a degree of, I wouldn't say comfort, but with in some style.
He's Tom Marshall, ESPN FC. He was at the game, 90,000 people. I thought the two goals they conceded, Tom, were very soft. And then if you go back and look them on replay, there's a lack of pressure on the ball on DeAndre Yedlin, who just comes forward. Nobody presses him. And he's allowed to get his head up and have a tremendous amount of time to pick out Bobby Wood, the Union Berlin forward. And then, obviously, Rafa Márquez and Uribe Peralta were looking at each other like, you know, who was picking up Jeff Cameron? And to their defense, it's absolutely brilliant set piece from Michael Bradley. But, you know, at 2-2, the U.S. had a free kick to win the thing. It was an amazing night. I think clearly the better team won. As I leave you tonight, Tom, anything else from the experience that you saw out in California?
No, I mean, just to highlight just how great it was to be there. And obviously, yeah. I mean, one of the big things, I just did a story on it, like a kind of color story. But, you know, it's the Mexican-American fans in there, and it's always, you know, I went around and did quite a lot of interviews before just talking to fans, you know, of both teams, but with, you know, maybe Mexican parents or Mexican heritage. And, you know, for me as an outsider, I mean, I've been down here in Mexico for 7 years, but, you know, the fan culture of the Mexican-American fans is, you know, is really unique and something, like, quite special because, you know, most of them are speaking English. Some of them are divided. You know, they'll support Mexico more than the U.S. Some of them will support the U.S. over Mexico. Some of them are absolutely diehard Mexico fans. And, I mean, I just think the mix of the cultures there is, you know, it's amazing. And I think that little by little people are picking up on those fans. And, you know, we saw Klinsmann say, you know, before the game, he said he wanted the U.S. national team to convert those Mexico fans in the stadium to their side. And I don't think they did, because I think if you look in, I think Mexico was the kind of aesthetically more pleasing team to watch on Saturday night.
I would go to the bank with that one. I don't think there's any question. You can't be aesthetic unless you have the ball. They had the ball. Hey, Tom, remind people where they can get your writings at, please.
Yeah, it's ESPN FC. There's a Mexico section there. And I'm on Twitter, at Mexico World Cup.
That'll do it for Dynamo All Access tonight. For Dave Philpott, I'm Glenn Davis. Thank you very much for tuning in tonight. A quick reminder, it's HoustonDynamo.com for Dynamo tickets. It's Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock. Facebook, Soccer Matters. And don't forget, it's the Dynamo Seattle this Sunday. Get out to BBVA Cup of Stadium. Don't miss it. Clint Dempsey and Obafemi Martins in town.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hi, everybody. It's Andy and James here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do fun facts.
Yes, we do. James, give me a fact.
Did you know that there is an extinct bandicoot whose official scientific name is Crash Bandicoot?
Lovely. I didn't know that. Did you know, James, that Upper Egypt is technically below Lower Egypt?
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. I would love to hear more about that.
Well, all you have to do is go and listen to No Such Thing as a Fish.
Where will I find it?
Oh, all over.
Okay, bye.
Bye.